Well, I want to do something a little different to start the sermon. Two weeks ago, I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and before the conference started, actually, I attended a lecture by the author, or it wasn't a lecture, it was like a presentation by the author Andy Crouch. Have you ever heard of Andy Crouch? He writes for like Christianity think pieces, and it was about this book called Strong and Weak, and it was for pastors and ministry leaders. Lindsay, the worship leader here, she was there as well, and you know, it's always like, I heard a cool podcast and I want to share it with you guys. You know, like there's a recency bias thing. But I thought this presentation was really helpful. It really challenged me personally, and I have not been able to stop thinking about it. And I think it's a good way to introduce actually this story about the feeding of the 5,000. So I want to take a minute and talk about it. The lecture or the presentation was about what makes a good life. What makes a good life? And Andy, the guy, he started with two big questions. First, what are we meant to be as human beings? What are we meant to be? Like, what's our purpose? And then second, why can't we escape the dogged sense that we're not fulfilling it? Like, what is the real purpose of life? And why do most of us, most of the time, have this sense that we're not quite hitting it? Well, the answer to the first question was that human beings are not just meant to survive, they are meant to thrive. There is something in us that wants to explore and expand. The word he used was flourishing. Every human being wants to flourish, not just survive, not just make it through the day, but expand to flourish. The language we use here is we want to be people who are fully alive. Fully alive. How do we do it? Right? That's like the actual interesting question. And what Crouch did in the lecture was show from the scriptures that flourishing comes from embracing two seemingly opposite things. He says, based on the Bible, we flourish to the degree that we embrace authority and vulnerability. A real meaningful human life comes from two opposite things, strength and weakness, capacity and frailty, authority and vulnerability. He calls this the paradox of flourishing. Now, human beings were created, the Bible tells us, uniquely. They were given dominion over the rest of God's creation. So there is a certain authority that comes with just being someone who bears the image of God. But human beings are also, and I think this is the interesting part, uniquely vulnerable amongst all the created order. Think about babies. You know, how long does it take until your children are safe and able to live well in the world? You know, 10, 12, 32, depends on your kid. We're uniquely vulnerable, and we can lose things in a way that can never be gained again, right? We lose a spouse. We didn't just lose someone that we live with. We lost something intrinsic to who we are. We're vulnerable in a unique way. So it's this paradox. We flourish to the degree that we embrace our authority and that we embrace our vulnerability, that we expose ourselves to the possibility of meaningful risk and meaningful loss. So that was the first question. Second big question, why don't we flourish? Well, it's rather obvious. Because we hesitate to embrace both of those things. Some of us hesitate to embrace our authority as human beings. We'd rather be passive. We don't want to take action. Almost all of us shy away from the possibility of loss. We fear vulnerability. And what really stood out to me about this lecture and why I think it's worth repeating to you guys is that risk is an essential part of what makes a good life. Isn't that interesting? How much of our life is about mitigating risk, mitigating the possibility of loss? Just think about it. You know, like, where do we buy a home? Like, where it's really safe. What kind of cars do we buy? Cars that are really safe. We shy away from tasks and responsibilities and relationships in which the possibility of loss is real. And what Crouch is saying in this lecture and in this book is that that there's something about the human existence, the human experience, that needs vulnerability to be fulfilled. I mean, and because he was speaking to pastors and ministry leaders, he actually called out a lot of people like me, people who pastor are pastors of churches that are relatively affluent and comfortable. So much of what we do as a church is to make people feel safe and normal. In reality, we should be exposing people to more risk. We should be asking, how do we put people in situations where the possibility of loss is real? Not because danger is good for its own sake, but because it's in authority and vulnerability together that constitute the image of God. And if you really think about it, you know, if Jesus Christ is the picture of a human life fully lived, if Jesus is the picture of someone who's fully alive, wasn't Jesus vulnerable? Actually, the root word of the word vulnerable in Latin, it's the same word for wound. To be vulnerable is to be woundable. And Jesus wasn't just woundable, Jesus was wounded. He invested himself in people who abandoned him. We talk about this later, he prayed for and loved and embraced even the people who rejected him and were trying to kill him. Jesus is the picture of a life fully lived, and Jesus was woundable. He was wounded. To flourish is to embrace authority and vulnerability. And for most of us in this room, we move towards flourishing by embracing more risk, by risking the possibility of loss, being vulnerable. So that's what I want to talk about today. I really want to call us as a community to be people who are not afraid to embrace risk. And this story, it's a very familiar story, story of the feeding of the 5,000. I think it gives us two risks that we are called to embrace as people who follow Jesus. We risk the impossible, and we risk being broken for the good of others. I want to call you today to risk the impossible and to risk being broken for the sake of others. First, risk the impossible. You know, part of life in the kingdom of God means that we step out and risk looking like total idiots and try that which is impossible apart from the grace of God. Part of being a follower of Jesus is taking the risk of stepping out. Maybe you're going to look like an idiot, but you're going to try that which is impossible apart from the grace of God. In the miracle of the feeding, Jesus, he goes out of his way to make this point. How so? Well, if you think about this story from a certain perspective, it really is a bunch of people gathered in the wilderness, assembled for the greatest Christian conference of all time. You have people, some scholars say there might have been 15,000 people there because it was just men that the text mentions, gathered in the wilderness, and Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is opening the scriptures and is teaching from them. Imagine the authority, the profundity, the insight that Jesus would have on the Bible. He's teaching multitudes. And you know, sure, some of you have been to a conference, whether it's Christian or not. Does the phrase lunch on your own mean anything to you? You know, you get like an agenda for the morning, 9 a.m., main session, 10:30, breakout, noon, lunch on your own. Well, the disciples reasonably expected this was a lunch on your own type of conference. You know, again, because there might have been 15,000 people there. They make a pretty rational suggestion. Jesus, in response, gives a perfectly irrational command. Send the crowd away, the disciples say, so they can buy something to eat, you know, lunch on your own. Jesus replies, why don't you feed them? Why don't you give them something to eat? And the disciples respond with equal parts disbelief and sarcasm. Yeah, Good idea. Let's spend thousands and thousands of dollars to feed 15,000 people. Are you crazy? And Jesus says, no, that's not what I'm asking you to do. I'm not asking you to pool together your resources and try and find a way to feed these people. That's not what I'm asking you to do. What I'm asking you to do is something that is impossible. And believe it or not, it's not until you realize that it's impossible, it's not until you realize that you are profoundly inadequate to fulfill this task that you will be able to do it. Now consider how Jesus does this miracle. Have you ever thought about that? Jesus could have prayed and trays of food could have descended from heaven in front of every single person there. But he didn't do it like that. He didn't create food out of thin air. He used the disciples' food. And it was only after the disciples, just imagine this, stepped out with 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed 15,000 people that their provision was miraculously multiplied. It was after they stepped out in faith that God provided for them in this miraculous way. It was after they risked looking like complete and utter morons that God came through for them. And I think, you know, it's dangerous to make a story normative, you know, make it a principle. But I do think there's even enough experience in this room probably to say that oftentimes it's when we realize, God, I am not able to do this. I don't have the capacity for this. And then we step out and try it anyway. That's when God really comes through for us. That's when we see him provide for us in amazing ways, provide the resources we need. And just think about this, right? You know, I say this all the time. Tell your friends about your relationship with Jesus. Invite them into the community. And we say, no, they're not going to care. They're not going to respond. It would take a miracle. Like, yeah, it would. So try it. Step out and try it and risk looking like a moron. It is only when we step out and are completely outside of our own comfort zones that we see God come through for us. Or the feeding of the 5,000. We think about that as just a picture of like holistic renewal. We want to make a profound difference in people's lives. We want to restore them physically and spiritually and socially and psychologically, but the needs are so great and we don't have any money. We don't even have a church building. How can we make that profound of a difference in people's lives? I think God would say to us, risk looking like idiots. Step out. Who cares if you don't have the money or the building or the people? Believe that I can do the impossible. Take the risk of believing that I can do the impossible. There's this fantastic quote that I tried to like Google find the author, but I couldn't. But it's on page 3, I think, of your bulletin. It's so profound. It's from a commentary on 2 Corinthians, but I just couldn't figure out who wrote the commentary. Here's what he says. It is not God's intention that we should be in ourselves adequate to our task, believing we can make a difference. Rather, God wants that we should be inadequate. If we only accept the tasks which we think are adapted to our powers, we are not responding to the call of God. There will be difficulties, limitations, insoluble problems, lack of people and money, a menacing outlook, endless misunderstandings and misrepresentations. We are not only to do our work despite these things, they are precisely the conditions requisite for the doing of it. And stepping out in faith, believing that we can feed people, that we can make a difference in people's lives, it's risky, isn't it? It's really risky. And there is definitely a chance that we look like morons. But Jesus doesn't call us to perform tasks that we are only adequate to do in ourselves. Jesus calls us to do things that are impossible apart from his grace. And part of being a follower of Jesus is risking that. And believing that he can come through for us. And I've seen that in this room. I've seen people do things that they would have never imagined themselves able to do months beforehand. We back? Cool. It's kind of dorky, but I don't want to put it through my shirt. All right. I've hit that point hard enough. Only the inadequate are adequate. Only the unqualified are qualified. If we know that it's going to take a miracle for the things we're being called to do to happen, and we step out and do them anyway, that's when God works through us. So we risk the impossible. We believe that God can work through us to change people's lives. Yeah, we may look like fools, but taking that risk, you guys, believing in the impossible, that's how you flourish. That is the way to real life. Okay, but that's not only the only risk that we get in this story. Life with Jesus also means taking the risk of being broken for the sake of others. Losing ourselves, pouring ourselves out, sacrificing for the sake of others. Caring more about other people's well-being than our own. Where do we see that in this story? Well, if you look at verse 41, you don't have to look there actually, I'll just read it. Jesus, taking the loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven, Jesus gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. There's two very simple, very profound verbs in that first sentence of verse 41. Jesus blessed and Jesus broke. Jesus blessed God the Father and Jesus broke. A little later in Mark's gospel, in chapter 14, verse 22, Jesus is presiding over what came to be called the Last Supper, the last meal he shared with his disciples before his death. And those two exact verbs pop up again right next to each other. Jesus blessed and Jesus broke. This is my body, Jesus said. Then he blessed God and then he broke the bread. In the feeding of the 5,000, is a story that prefigures or that foreshadows Jesus' Last Supper. And when John, the disciple who wrote the Gospel of John, when he tells the story of the feeding of the 5,000, he makes it clear that the people who are gathered to hear Jesus on that day, they want to make him king. And so the real context or the real environment is these people are looking at Jesus and they're saying, are you the new Moses that's going to liberate us? Are you the new David who's going to be our king? Are you the ruler, the promised figure from God that's going to bring us life? And Jesus says, I am the new Moses. In fact, I'm not just another Moses. I'm the ultimate Moses because I'm going to liberate you not just from political oppression, but from the reign of sin and death. And in the same way that Moses gave you bread in the wilderness, I will feed you with something that will cause you to never hunger again. And you know how Jesus did that? By blessing and breaking. Blessing and breaking. Because when Jesus was dying on the cross, and the people who rejected him were mocking him, insulting him, blaspheming God, Jesus blessed them, and then Jesus broke. Jesus died. Blessing and breaking. That's how Jesus gave people life. He blessed and he broke. And if we want to be people who care more about others than ourselves, who gladly lay down our lives so that others can flourish, we need to see Jesus blessing and breaking on the cross. We need to see him blessing and breaking as our substitute and as our example. So let's see Jesus blessing and breaking as our substitute. What do I mean? Well, thought experiment here. Picture a loaf of unbroken bread. It's kind of hard to eat, isn't it? It can't be eaten very well if it stays whole. It has to be broken. And if you think about it, if you never ate in the ultimate sense, what would happen? You die, right? You decompose. You would break down. And so this is kind of a rhetorical device, but the point is that when you look at a piece of bread, either you break or it breaks. One thing has to break for the other to be made whole. Well, Jesus Christ says, I am the bread of life. I am the one who will come down from heaven and feed you with that which will always satisfy you. I'll nourish you, make you whole. How does he do that? By breaking on our behalf. Because when Jesus was dying on the cross, he wasn't just doing it as a martyr. He wasn't just dying for our principles. Jesus was bearing the punishment of our sin. He was atoning for that which we deserved to be punished with. He was breaking on our behalf so that when we believe in him, when we put our faith and we rest in him, we could be filled, we could be whole. Jesus broke so that we could be fed. And if you do know him, and if you do rest in him and find in him the love and the acceptance and that bracing consolation that our hearts long for, then you know that he does feed you, that him being broken on our behalf brings life. And it's when we have that dynamic at the center of our lives, when we're full and nourished and satisfied in him, that is what inspires and enables us to live radically for other people. Does that make sense? It's when we're full of him that we have the resources, the energy to endlessly pour ourselves out. Not endlessly, that's a little dramatic. But we're inspired to pour ourselves out for other people. I'm telling you, that is the key. It's as simple as daily, meditative, immersive prayer. If you want energy to be a better spouse, to be a better parent, to be a better employee, to be a better son or daughter, you skip the books. Do daily quiet times. It's our life in the Lord that nourishes us and inspires us to give ourselves to other people. Okay, so we need to see him as our substitute, but we also need to see him as our example. Jesus blessed and Jesus broke so that others could have life, and we should do the same. What do I mean? Well, success, power, status, how does the world pursue those things? Through me first power, right? Me first power. How do we get ahead? How do we climb the ladder? We fit other people around us. They break so that we can stay whole. We plan and we strategize and we think about how the different people in our workplace can be aligned with our strategic interests, right? They break so that we can stay whole. That's how the world works. But Jesus Christ, who came from ultimate reality, who was God's own begotten Son, he practiced you first power. He broke so that others could have life. He sacrificed himself so that others could be lifted up. He abandoned the mansion of heaven so that we could have a home with the Father. He gave away eternal wealth so that we could be rich in the grace of God. He poured himself out so that others could have life. Lost my space. And if you see him, pouring himself out for others, losing so that others could gain. You put that into your heart, and that will inspire you to pursue influence and status and change in a very different way than the world pursues them. I mean, has it not is it not more permissible than ever to hate people who disagree with you? Isn't that true? It's never, whether you're on the right or on the left, it's never been more permissible to just hate people who see the world differently than you do or think they're complete morons. And trust me, that's on the left and on the right. In this moment, that is like the prevailing sin. Jesus poured himself out, gave himself for people who saw the world very differently than he did. Jesus sacrificed for people who were enemies of God. What if Christians started to act like that? What if that became what the church was known for? A willingness to serve and bless and pour themselves out, even for people who are very different than them. Most Christians pursue me first power too. We want other people to change so that we can be exalted. Jesus changed so that others could be exalted. He practiced a very different type of power. That's how Jesus saved, and his saving power will flow through us in a similar way. You know, the possibilities for our community here, I think, are profound. Kyle mentioned kind of indirectly, that we are a church plant that was planted by a large resource church that did what I've just been describing. They gave so that we could be lifted up. It's amazing. And we have, I think, the opportunity to show the people of our city a different way of pursuing the good life. A different way of showing people how to have joy and satisfaction and meaning, that it comes through Christ. We have an amazing team of people here, the core team. Whether you've been coming for 3 weeks or you've been at Christ Church for 30 years, you can be on the core team. It's an amazing group of people. When I talk to other church planners, they are so jealous of the team that I have. We have possibilities, I think, that are endless to show people a different way of living the good life. And I think of being a church that holds things together that are often kept separate, right? That you can be deep and thoughtful in the way that you practice your faith, but also passionate and vibrant in your relationship with Jesus. That you can be rooted in something historic, something that transcends our moment, while also be engaged and sensitive to the realities of everyday life. I think we have profound potential to do an amazing thing. So let's risk doing the impossible. Amen? Let's risk doing the impossible, and let's risk practicing you first power. Let's risk pouring ourselves out for the sake of other people. Let's not be so nervous about our position, our influence, our status. Let's gladly just lose. You know, let's just lose. Whatever losing means for you, let's just lose so that others can win. Amen?